So a big part of our exploration in our evolutionary laboratory has been into understanding what the real obstacles are to this higher potential becoming fully manifest, and then developing effective spiritual practices to help us step beyond these obstacles once and for all, so that we can fully embody this extraordinary possibility. Now, one of the interesting things we've found is that although all of us have a lot of little habits and tendencies that seem to be obstacles on our spiritual path, most of these are actually red herrings, meaning the things that we tend to think are blocking us or obstructing us on the path aren't really what gets in our way, not in a deeper sense. So in other words, if we were to list what we see as the internal obstacles on the path, we might put things like laziness or a busy mind or a lack of focus or a lack of will. And while any of those things can be a challenge on the path, they aren't really the biggest obstacles to growth. So the first major obstacle to our higher evolution is going to sound rather mundane, but its implications are actually incredibly far-reaching, and they affect all of us to a person. And it has to do with our assumptions about change. You see, deep down, most of us don't really believe that profound change, radical change, extraordinary change is actually possible. I'm not saying we're cynical. I'm talking about even the ones of us who are really optimistic and hopeful and positive. But what I'm talking about is, you see, whenever we think about trying to change something or about reaching for a higher possibility, because of the way we've evolved, most of us tend to assume things are much more fixed, much more static, much more unchanging than they actually are. It's part of how we're wired. See, during the vast eons of our early evolution, things changed so slowly that in one person's lifetime, it seemed like nothing was changing at all. Technology didn't change. You had the same stone tools when you were born as you did when you died. You ate the same food, you saw the same people. There was no real change visible other than just a person growing up. So essentially, we're deeply wired to look at the world around us and the world within us and see it as something that is standing still, that is not moving. Carter Phipps published a wonderful book last year called Evolutionaries, in which he explores this emerging evolutionary worldview that a lot of us are so excited about. If you haven't read it, I strongly encourage you to check it out. But in this book, he named the very thing I'm talking about. He called it the spell of solidity. The spell, like a magic spell, the spell of solidity. And his point was that even though we all kind of believe in evolution in some way, there's a deeper, more persistent belief that the world we live in is static. It's unchanging. And that we are solid or static too. So even today, when technology is changing at such a rapid rate, we still tend to assume things are much more unchanging than they are. For instance, on a societal level, when we look out at the many problems facing humanity in the world right now, whether it's ending poverty, stopping human trafficking, dealing with climate change, we tend to see these issues as intractable, unfixable. Or on a cultural level, when we look at things like human greed, self-interest, cruelty, violence, They all seem so deeply rooted in our human nature that we have a hard time imagining how these things could ever really change. It's human nature, after all, right? So they say. And similarly, on an individual level, when we take up efforts to try to change our own consciousness and our own behavior, we also tend to assume that our own nature is much more permanent or unchanging than it actually is. Now, the reason we have a hard time imagining great change is, as I said before, we're wired to assume things are static. Or to put it slightly differently, it's because we haven't yet really let in the implications of the reality of evolution. Now, again, I know if I asked who here believes in evolution, everybody would probably raise your hand. But just because we believe in the theory doesn't mean we've truly let it in, faced and accepted all of its implications. Because you see, what's only beginning to sink in for all of us is that everything under the sun is always changing. Not just everything under the sun, everything in the cosmos. Evolution isn't just something that's happening within the universe. The universe, really properly understood, is a process of evolution. And that includes you. You are evolution also. So what I'm saying is that to counter this spell of solidity, this assumption of stasis or limitation, we need to begin to open ourselves up to the reality that this whole cosmos, as static and as solid as it might appear, is in fact evolution in motion. And so are we. So what this means in practice is that we need to constantly question the appearance of solidity, of stasis, and to realize that things are not as solid as they seem. So to put this into practice, when you look around and you see something that seems stuck or immovable, you have to take a step back to a larger frame, even maybe a larger time frame, to see that it hasn't always been this way, and it won't always be this way. Whatever it is, it's going to change. We have to realize that, you know, at any point historically, if you took a snapshot of the way things were, you would have never imagined where they were going. Imagine if you had been there before the Big Bang, where there was basically nothing going on. And someone said, hey, pretty soon this is going to all blow up into this big, huge cosmic fire. You would have said, right. It seemed preposterous. There's just a singularity. There's nothing here. Nothing's ever happened in the history. And what? Or imagine you were here about 500,000 years after the Big Bang, when there was just chaotic burning gas flying around and no sign of order at all. And someone had said, hey, pretty soon all this chaos is going to start to organize itself into stars and galaxies. That voice of limitation would have said, where's the evidence for that? This is just burning chaotic gas. Or let's say you'd been here about 6 billion years ago, shortly before the emergence of life, and all that existed was just dust and rocks and water. And someone had said, hey, believe it or not, pretty soon this amazing thing called life is going to explode into existence, and it's going to be green and lush. There will be plants and animals with eyeballs and teeth out of basically just dust and rocks and water. It would have seemed impossible. Or even on a cultural level, thinking about cultural evolution, think back to when slavery was publicly condoned and accepted as a natural part of civilized life. Human slaves, people doing your work for you that you owned. Now, many of us saw the Lincoln movie this past year, which documented the moment in U.S. history when slavery finally became illegal. But imagine how it seemed just a decade or two before that. If you had said slavery was going to become outlawed in a short time, people would have said you were dreaming. It's seemed impossible from that vantage point. So to begin stepping out of this assumption of limitation or the spell of solidity, I want to invite you to consider the possibility that the highest hopes and aspirations you have for humanity are actually real living potentials, that they are in fact visions of the future that we're going to create together. We don't know how, but we're in an evolutionary cosmos. Evolution's what's happening. What direction are we going to take it? So here's a little practice that you can try, and I'm encourage you to do it after today's seminar, because I want to keep us moving. But it's a practice you can try to begin breaking up this assumption of limitation. So I want to invite you to take time. You can do this with a journal, perhaps, reflecting. Take time to think about the things in the world that seem the most intractable, the most immovable, the most unchanging and stuck. And just bring them to mind, one at a time. And for each, step back and look at it in an evolutionary context. Meaning, see each of these seemingly intractable dynamics as really just a current step in a progression of evolution. So you might, you know, we'll all have different lists, but you might, you know, some people say, oh, you know, there's no way we can change things because think about corporate greed or the military and industrial complex that's running everything. So what does it mean to look at that in an evolutionary context? Well, you don't have to step back very far to realize corporations and big industry are really brand new inventions. They only came into existence within the last couple hundred years in response to, you know, social inventions, really, in response to a certain need and a certain opportunity. And are they going to stay the same way as they are? No. They're going to change over time as they fail to meet the needs of a changing world. That's what drives evolution. Old structures don't meet new needs, so they fall away and new structures are born. How long is that going to take? I don't know. Is it going to happen? I guarantee it. Or you might think about something like war. War has been around in some form pretty much from the beginning, with isolated, you know, moments here and there where it wasn't happening. But what has changed? The number of people willing to go to war with each other is decreasing dramatically. It used to be that everyone was fighting everyone else. Jared Diamond, in his book Guns, Germs, and Steel, said, anthropologist, you know, he said there was a time when if you encountered a member of another tribe in the woods, there were only two responses. You would either try to kill them or you'd run away from them before they killed you. Now we have broad alliances and treaties and economic partnerships between most of the human race. How long will it be before we no longer go to war with each other? I don't know. But if you look at the gradual trajectory, it seems quite certain that we're going to get there eventually. I guess you always have to put the caveat on there if we don't blow ourselves up first or destroy our biosphere. But the point is, you know, we have to step back and see it's not so stuck. Now, you might wonder what all this has to do with spirituality and your own transformation. I've been talking a lot here about kind of societal evolution, cultural evolution. Well, the reality is that when it comes to our own transformation and awakening, most of us have a hard time imagining how dramatically things can change for us as well. So we've had a certain experience of life up to this point, and even if we've changed in a lot of positive ways over time, when it comes to the possibility of radical spiritual transformation, most of us can't really conceive of how radically our own consciousness, our own experience of alive, of living, and our own response to life could shift. And part of the reason is that we aren't really in touch with how much we've already changed in our life. And it's just a funny thing about human psychology. When we look back in our memory and try to remember what it was like to be 10 years old or 20 years old or some younger age, we tend to reimagine that event as though we, the person we are now, was having that experience back then. But that's not what was happening. We're a profoundly different person than we were when we were 10 or 20. I mean, assuming you're not 21 right now. I'm sure a few of you are, so my apologies. Most of us are a bit older. But anyway, the point is we're in a process of emergence. In fact, it would probably be more accurate to say that we are a process of emergence, of evolution, of unfolding. So anything you could say about yourself, about the kind of person you are or what defines you, isn't really a statement about how you are in any static or solid sense. It's just a statement about how you are now. You're a fluidity. You're a process. You're not a stable, unchanging thing. And I know that that can be a little disconcerting to the part of ourself that imagines us to be a permanent, static being. But if you can stay with it a bit, hopefully you'll start to feel the thrill of what? Of being in motion. Because that's what's really true about us. We're a movement or a process of unfolding. It's actually much more exciting than just being a static entity anyway. And it's more true. So it's only when we can begin to open to this reality of unending change, the dynamic process that we are, that we can really make room for the possibility of the kind of dramatic transformation that I described at the beginning. So I'm inviting us all to look at ourselves through evolutionary eyes for a moment in order to make room for the kind of awakening and transformation that we're exploring here today. So from this evolutionary perspective, I want to invite you to consider that the highest possibilities you sense for yourself are also real living possibilities. Their visions and glimpses of who you can become, of how extraordinary life can be. We need to be true to them. So I already mentioned one practice you can do to begin to work on this assumption of limitation. And there's a second practice I want to leave you with regarding this particular obstacle, which has two parts to it. First, I want to invite you to become what I call an evolutionary detective, doing evolutionary detective work on yourself. And what that means is, in this case, it means go through your day, go through your life, noticing all the ways that this assumption of limitation or this spell of solidity or this presumption that things really can't change. Notice all the ways it shows up in your own experience every day. Just pay attention. You can document it if you want to be really a rigorous detective. You can write it down and begin to study it. But the second thing is, whenever you notice this assumption of limitation, this change isn't possible stance asserting itself, take some time in that moment to look at that situation through evolutionary eyes, meaning expand the time frame. Realize that radical change has always been going on, and that whatever change you can envision is certainly possible if you're willing to make room for it. So I encourage you to engage in these practices, both in relation to things in your outer life, like your projects, your relationships, the world at large, and also in relation to your own inner life, your own spiritual transformation. And the goal of this practice is to begin to live in what I call a consciousness of possibility rather than an assumption of limitation. A consciousness of possibility.